Ours is a podcast of the Forsaken. I am your leader, the Banshee Queen, the Dark Lady, and you are listening to Corpse Run Radio.
This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken. We are the Forsaken.
Yeah, I mean, you know more about the upcoming story than I do, so.
Well, but all of that stuff we can't say anything about.
I know. So I know.
It leaves
I know.
You in sort of a, and you don't want to play. I definitely don't want to play into fears or frustrations that any players might have.
Sure.
I think it's more important to keep things, you know, positive and remind them that the characters and designers have put so much thought into where so many of these characters are going, and you know that they can expect to see twists and turns as the story develops that are cool stuff coming, you know.
The daughter of the sea, beware, I heard him cry. His words carried upon the ocean breeze as he sank beneath the tide. Those blood-soaked shores of Kalimdor, where sailors fought and died. The admiral fell at their amour because she left his side.
Why this, so daughter of the sea? Why this? Always the pride of our nation's eyes. How could she go astray?
When she did flee across the ocean deep, the admiral followed west. What else but sail daughter's life and pray just a deep breath. But there he found upon those distant shores enemies on the rise. But when he faced those savage foes, listening now. Father. I heard across a moonlit sea.
The old voice warning me, beware, beware, the daughter of the sea, beware, beware of me.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of Corpse Run Radio. What you just heard was a little snippet of my pre-interview chat with Patty. I used part of it in one of the teasers I put out to some podcasts, but I have to say, in hindsight, her statement there that she didn't want to play into the fear and the frustrations of the players, that remark was towards a question on my part about what we could talk about and what not. Obviously, she can't talk about stuff that is still to come, and dancing around it, that is bad interviewing. The fact that you can't talk about something that hasn't been released yet, be it a game, be it a movie, plot, something, if it's not supposed to be out yet, it's not supposed to be out yet. And in my opinion, this is just as valid a point as can be. So, like so many other content creators, I implore the people that are up in arms, literally, about what Blizzard did with Sylvanas' Warbringers episode. It is only the first step. It isn't even part of the expansion. We have, in my opinion, we have a duty as the players, as the consumers of the content that they put out, to let the story be told and judge it at the end. Just because you are sitting in front of a puzzle with 1,000 pieces, for argument's sake, and you put together 50, and the message that those 50 pieces show you don't like, that doesn't mean that the other 950 pieces aren't worth exploring or being done. So my thought, let Blizzard tell their story, the story that they intend to tell us, because we do not have the entire picture in front of us. We do not know where it all leads. And people say that they turned Sylvanas into a Garrosh 2.0 or a Lich King 2.0 or whatnot. We don't know that yet. Just because we see 50 pieces of the puzzle and the message that we are supposed to read once the entire 1,000 pieces have been put together, we don't know the entire message until the 1,000th puzzle piece has been put in place. That's my take. Am I happy with the piece that we got? I don't know. I sat there for the longest time and didn't know what to think. Am I abandoning my Dark Lady? No, definitely not. Can I see the frustration on the Alliance player's side? Definitely. When I played through the Alliance side War of Thorns campaign, with the meta knowledge that I had of the eventual burning, it's a thing that life is sacred in the real world. At least it should be. And Blizzard knows that. They play towards that. They know exactly what they do. They know exactly that the embodiment of life in the game is the Kaldorei culture and Teldrassil and the Druid affiliation, so to speak, of their leader, well, their leader's husband, all the Druidic stuff that cherishes life, all the Horde Druids that talk about how can they do that and it's so difficult to rationalize it. I totally get that. On the other hand, like I said, and this is going to be the final bit, and it's going to be a repetition, Let Blizzard tell the entire story. We'll see what happened. Someone in a video that I watched earlier before sitting down and recording this said that they were thinking that it was going to be something like Sylvanas is going to save the world in the end, but to get to the point where she can do that, she needs to do stuff that we aren't happy with. I don't know about it, that, and I don't want to speculate too much. My thought is, I hope that Blizzard doesn't screw it up. The only thing that I'm really sad about, and I mentioned that in a tweet already, and I still stand by that 100,000%. I'm really, really sad that they didn't give Sylvanas a song. But again, their game, their decision. I'm just a consumer of content, a content creator on the podcast side. But still, that doesn't give me any say in how Blizzard has to develop their content that they do, because it's their content, not mine, not any players, unless you count the developers being players as well. Alright, on with the show. Today I would like to let people know the story of both sides from the War of Thorns, because there are people out there that only played one side and only intend to play one side because they are not bifactional, which I totally get. Still, Noble made a video today, and I thought this video is really good for telling both sides of the story simultaneously, not having to go through each faction's version of the same story, but have a parallel look at both factions at the same time, so to speak. And at the end, he has a additional look at more story from the collector's edition, which gives more insight, background to the story that we played through. But that story that Noble is referencing is eventually going to be made available in the collector's edition's book that comes with it, and in a downloadable version that I would assume gets made available at the same time, basically at launch day. So something for us to look forward to. So here now is Noble 87 with his story of the War of Thorns and the collector's edition stories. By the way, the music that you hear towards the end is a little piece by Charm. She has made a original music piece that is called Teldrassil Burns. As far as I know, that's not a part of that song, what you hear in Noble's segment. But at the end of the show, I'm going to play that piece by Charm, Teldrassil Burns, so look forward to that.
Just a little disclaimer before we start the video. This is indeed my Monday video, only done a little bit earlier, as we wanted to get this out as soon as possible. I might sound a little bit different since I'm currently dealing with a cold. And, on a final note, in this video I'll be retelling the events of the War of Thorns campaign. But near the end, we got a little something special for y'all. The collector's edition, the short stories. Stay tuned, because... juicy. Hello everyone. At the end of Legion, we were able to defeat Argus, and with the help of the Pantheon, we imprisoned the Dark Titan Sargeras. In his final moments, the Lord of the Legion penetrated the world with his swords, not delivering a death blow, but doing some serious damage to the planet. Azeroth is wounded, and her speaker, Mac the Bronzebeard, he goes around warning the world that we need to focus our efforts on healing her, or we might have to start looking for a new planet to live on. Now wounded, she's bleeding a material called Azerites, which is a completely new discovery for most people, except for Jester Galliwix, whose people, they'd found it all the way back on the island of Kazan. Digging so deep, it might have actually caused the destruction of the little island, but all the same, he presents the new material to his warchief, and upon touching it, she says,
"This will change everything." I told you!
This new substance is the most powerful thing they've ever held. It gives you incredibly smart thoughts, strategies will race through your mind. And the Dark Lady, she saw herself no longer as a Dark Lady or even a queen. She was a goddess of destruction and creation. And she was stunned that she'd never understood how deeply those two were intertwined. Armies, cities, entire cultures. She could raise them and she could fell them. Stormwind would be among the first, yielding his people to swell the numbers of her own. She could deal death on a scale that... Yeah, her dream of staying alive forever, of never going back to the hell that she witnessed. That has her quickly weaponized as, right? Well, Gilliwix, he has his people minding the stuff.
Nothing good has ever come out of Silithus.
The Alliance finds out about the operations, and while touching it, it gives Anduin a similar feeling of power and strategy. His mind races to how many it could heal, how many could it strengthen, soothe, invigorate, and inspire. Yet, how many could it kill? And the thought was a gut punch. There are definitely those amongst the Alliance that would love to use Azrite in an offensive matter, people like Rogers and Greymane. But Anduin, he's pretty clear about his intentions, and the rest follow his lead. All this information is from the novel Before the Storm, and I'll link to a video I've done at the end if you want more details. Now the tale ends with a meeting between Forsaken and humans. A meeting that does not end too well, yet no war was started between the Alliance or the Horde. That war begins with this campaign, where the Horde troops are summoned by the Warchief to the Undercity, as SI-7 operatives, they're crawling through Orgrimmar.
Though our long war against the Legion has ended, the Horde cannot afford a moment of respite. Meet me in my chambers in the Undercity, where we can discuss our next move, discreetly.
Instead of focusing our efforts on Silithus, the Banshee Queen lets us know that that is exactly what she wanted the Alliance to believe. Instead, we're going to focus on Teldrassil, the home of the Night Elves. Azrite, it has changed the balance of power across all of Azeroth. Though we do not yet fully understand its potential, it is clear that this substance has vast destructive capabilities. She wonders, what will war look like in 20 years? In 100? How can the Horde hope to defend its borders if the Alliance controls the flow of Azrite? It's uncertain. But what is certain is that the Alliance will use Darnassus as a safe harbor for funneling Azrite into the Eastern Kingdoms. Anduin Rin will build powerful new weapons, and sooner or later, he will turn them upon our homelands. First, he will strike at the Undercity, and then Silvermoon. Then, his gaze will fall upon all of Kalimdor. For the sake of the Horde's future, we must be the first to act. By occupying Darnassus, we will be the ones to control the flow of Azrite and ensure that it cannot be used against us. The Alliance would not dare attack its own city for fear of harming civilians. With a single stroke, we will guarantee generations of peace. The best defense is a good offense, and we all know how much of a warmonger Anduin Rin is. Attacking them before they attack us, that is the only way to secure a safe future with someone like him as High King. It's High Overlord Varrok Saurfang that leads an army towards Silithus. By now, they've reached the Northern Barrens, where we meet up with him, and we let him know that the preparations are complete. It's time to capture World Tree. Meanwhile, on the Alliance side, we have King Anduin Rin, who's summoning the troops with a heavy heart.
Though the Legion has fallen, a new threat rises. Disturbing messages are arriving from our operatives in Orgrimmar. Join me at Stormwind Keep to discuss the matter further.
Sylvanas' plans of misinforming the enemy faction, that has definitely worked, as they believe that an army is marching on Silithus to claim the Azrite. Heroes of the Horde and Alliance, they fought side by side during the Argus campaign. Order halls, class members, they've been brought together to stand against the threat of the Legion. To think that Sylvanas is ready to cast the unity aside. Yet Matthias Shaw, leader of the SI-7, he shows up with disturbing news. Turns out that our reports were wrong. The Horde has diverted and are marching into Ashenvale. The Night Elves have already sent out the forces towards Silithus to support war efforts. They must be halfway by now, and the only Kaldori defenders left, that are the Darnassian City Guard. They won't last long against an army, so we ride out to meet with our commander, the Laren Summermoon, to buy as much time as we can until the fleet comes back home.
Soldiers of the Horde, ready your blades! Today, we march on the Kaldori!
The Horde army moves into Ashenvale, while we meet up with Lorash, a rogue that's going to help us sack Essenar. Hundreds of them have already attacked Kaldori outpost across Ashenvale. On his signal, they will begin the next phase of this war, sowing chaos.
First, let me signal the others to begin their assault. This fire burns with purple smoke. They should see it rise above the trees soon. After you, champion. You mark the safe targets. I'll bring them down.
Our targets are the guards in the city, with a choice of not actually harming the civilians. Lorash, he doesn't care either way. He is a bit disturbed about killing a man in his sleep, but he also compliments us for our style, and is worried about alerting the guards. Being offered a choice, that's very nice. Yet on the Alliance side, we find out that either choice, it doesn't really matter. Or forces, they came in later and did the dirty work for us, as everybody's dead.
The bodies. So many bodies. We tried to set a trap for the Horde. It failed. We could not stop them. Our outposts were taken by surprise. They fell one by one. The guards were poisoned. And the civilians, not even they were spared. I only hope that some managed to flee before. Forgive me, friend. Who did you say you were? Are you the one Malfurion spoke of? There are more wisps than I can count. The loss of life. Merciful Ilune, please bless the fallen.
Anduin, or Shaw, they were the ones sending us to help her. But apparently Malfurion, he's also aware of this, as he asked us if he's the one who sent us. Either way, we need to keep in mind that with Battle for Azeroth Collector's Edition, we're also going to get two short stories. Both of them, they take place around the same time period, but both of them are told from either faction's point of view. It's uncertain when exactly the events take place, but if I had to make a guess, I'd say somewhere around this time. If you're not ordering the Collector's Edition, but you do really enjoy the storyline, don't worry, they will be available online for free. Now in the preview, on the Alliance side, we have Elegy, in which we read about the Laren and her troops being attacked by Horde forces, and they discovered the ruse. They discovered that the Horde is not actually on the move to Silphus. A messenger is then sent to Malfurion, while another, he's sent out to check how far the Horde has already moved in. It's just a tiny preview, so hopefully more details will become available. While on the Horde side, that story is called A Good War, which has Sourfang in Estrenar. Malfurion Stormrage shows up, to which the orc challenges him to Makura, knowing that he doesn't stand a chance against the Archdruids. The rest of the troops, they make their escape, while their duel takes place, a duel interrupted by Sylvanas, who saves Sourfang's life. That's all we really have at the moment, and I can't wait for the full version to be released. But it makes sense for this to take place at this point, to take place while we're still at Estrenar. Details unclear, but what is pretty certain is that Estrenar falls to the Horde, to which they move on to the already established outpost of Sorumgar. We make sure that they're ready to accommodate the might of the Horde, while back in Estrenar, Dalaran, she wants to honor the dead and take care of the butchers that still skulk the city.
Do you hear the screams?
We must defeat the Horde and their vile warchief, though it might cost us that which we hold most dear. The forest stirs as Malfurion summons the wisps, like he did in days past during Warcraft 3, to take care of the demon lord Archimonde. This time, he calls upon the ancestors to form a protective wall and halt the Horde's advance.
You will come no further, Banshee Queen.
Soldiers, no! Do not rush the... fools! At least now we know how dangerous the wisps can be.
You may pass through the wall, hero. The wisps will not harm you.
Sylvanas has to deal with an ambush from Asheville Huntresses, and with most of her troops demolished by the wall, she retreats to Zorumgar outposts.
Malfurion, Horde forces have gathered at the Zorumgar outpost.
The Banshee Queen seeks to capture the World Tree. Dalaran, travel to our outposts. Gather every soldier you can find and bring them here.
And you, Shando?
Sylvanas seeks to engage me, and I plan to give her what she wants. Word has been sent to our fleet. Ilune willing, they will soon return.
As you command.
The ancients call to him, and we must protect him at all costs. The Druids of the Claw, they're rallied for battle, while the Blackwood Firbolgs, they've been driven to madness by the Horde's invasion. If left to the madness, they could strike us from behind, while our forces engage the Horde. It pains them to do so, but we must put the creatures out of their misery. Meanwhile, back at Zorumgar Outpost, we have Sylvanas, Sourfang and Afanos, who are trying to figure out what to do about the wall.
A wall of wisps? Surely it is nothing our Dark Rangers and a few demolishers cannot overcome, my lady.
The scouting party I led to Malfurion underestimated the wisps, and they paid the price for doing so. We cannot destroy the wisps, not in numbers enough to matter, but we may be able to disperse them.
Interesting. The wisps respond to Malfurion's call. But what if more of the forest were to cry out for help?
Precisely what I was thinking.
Champion, would you be so kind as to test our theory?
Ancient magic. The spirits of the ancestors. It's nothing against a bit of solid goblin ingenuity as we hop into a plane and we bombard the crap out of the wisps and the trees.
It seems the wisps are susceptible to distraction. We will exploit this weakness to get past them. Sarfang, take a squad into Fellwood. Seek a path over the mountain into Darkshore. But leave the siege weapons under my command. We will squeeze Malfurion from both sides.
Warchief, there is no safe passage through Fellwood.
Find one or make one. Time is a luxury we do not possess.
No many smugglers, Blightcaller?
I beg your pardon.
I am not naive. There is little chance that Everlook receives all its cargo through legitimate means. Someone is using a hidden route through Fellwood.
Most smugglers would prefer to avoid the attention of the High Overlord. But I believe we can locate one who can be persuaded to assist us.
Then it is decided. Sarfang, Nathanos, you will leave at once.
While Sarfang and Nathanos, they go on their own adventures through Fellwood, we meet up with the Banshee Queen, who used her dark powers to funnel through a small portion of her forces.
We pass through the wall on my command. Brace yourselves! Pass through the wall, quickly! I cannot hold it much longer! Once a breach has been made, the pain is bearable. Just give me a moment.
The wall will be a problem for a while, halting the majority of the Horde forces. But for now, we have enough to push through. Enough to take the Master's Glaive from those savage elves. Malfurion must be gathering his forces, so we press on through the forest, the sacred forest of the elves, both a protective and offensive measure for their land. Sentry owls are hidden amongst the trees, spying on our every movement, so we shut the eyes of the forest, while the frenzied Firbolg, they cannot be allowed to stand in our way. With the eyes shut, only one thing remains. We need to take care of the ears. The ancients, they can feel the vibrations of our footsteps and report our every move to Malfurion. Time to defeat the burning ancient at the grove, where the Archdruid finally shows up.
Sylvanas, your foul deeds desecrate this sacred place. Undo Falador!
Malfurion, how gracious of you to join us. Who would have guessed that you would come to protect your precious trees?
Be gone, witch!
My eyes! It burns! Where did you fly away to, little bird?
The crow has flown, but we've moved enough of our troops to the Darkshore to establish a foothold. The local Firbolg at the Blackwood Den. They will need to be slaughtered, though. While the Horde banners, they will rally the troops. But don't worry about it. Once we've conquered Darnassus, the elders of the Blackwood tribe, they will be thanking us for murdering them. I mean, restoring peace to the Den. While the rest of our army sets up camp, the Dark Lady's attention is drawn by something interesting at Nashville.
Sappers, gather your gear and follow me. Bring every shredder we have.
By the time that Dalaran and the Alliance reaches the grove, there's a monster shredder that's trying to desecrate it, so we destroy it before the Ancients of the Forest are taken out, and it's Onu that points us towards the Blackwood Den. The Ancients of the Forest are all connected to one another, and they sense the disturbance, the thundering clamor of war. Soon, their brethren will answer in kind, for nothing shall disrupt the balance of nature. Before that moment, it falls to us to take care of business, and at the Den, we can see the remaining Firbolg guarded by the Horde. Their camp has already been built, but it doesn't mean that we can't do a bit of damage by sabotaging their demolishers. While the Elder Firbolg, they're escorted to a safer place. It's Onu that senses which interested the Dark Lady so much, but the powerful force that he's sensing at Nashville, it's actually hurting him. We discover that a massive deposit of Azerite, the dead is the source of his pain. The Horde is already hard at work gathering it, despite Sylvanas, who says,
Azerite, with this in our grasp, all who dare to oppose the Horde will fall. Proceed with caution, champion. It seems the Alliance has beaten us to it. That ship must have come from Darnassus. Which means I have a crow to hunt.
bit of a time mix-up here, unless one side maybe wiped out the other and their leaders are unaware. Either way, both sides go in and kick the other faction's booty, while also collecting the Azerites. Melfurion and his forces hold the line at Wildbent River, yet we do not stand alone. The Ancients have answered the call, and on their branches we do some massive damage to the Horde. Yet Sylvanas and the goblins, they've been working hard at weaponizing Azerites, and from the sky they unleash its deadly potential upon the Alliance. Both sides acknowledge that this battle is a stalemate for every enemy that they slay to replace them on the battlefields.
Wildbend River is locked in a stalemate, and Malfurion knows it. We must stay the course for now. I will continue leading our soldiers through the wall while we await word from Sarfang. In the meantime, we will do all that we can to keep the Kaldori under pressure. We shall not afford them the luxury of a peaceful night's rest. This is war.
The Banshee Queen seems to have forgotten that she's actually fighting Night Elves. Well, Malfurion, he actually believes that they're too few in number to stand toe-to-toe. They must fall back and regroup in Darnassus. If we hope to push the Horde out of their lands, we must call upon all the strength that the people have to offer. The druids, the priestesses, the sentinels, all are called to arms to defend their land against the encroaching Horde. Only together can we hope to end the stalemate at the Wildbend River, while even the fleet that was en route to Silithus, that makes its return.
Our fleet has returned from Silithus. Loon be praised. Their might is sorely needed. King Anduin will send his soldiers to aid us. We must hold our ground until they arrive. Your deeds will not be forgotten by the Kaldori, hero. The aid you lend in these dark times could make all the difference.
May our will be stronger than their machines of war.
A war is not won or lost in a single battle. Our day will come.
And while we wait for our forces to prepare, we spend our time fighting each other in Darkshore. World quests, they recruit heroes to aid with fighting the enemy, cleaning up some Azerites, continue to fight, with Night Elves proclaiming that they don't even want to fight. Some time passes until...
For the Horde!
Sarfang, it's about time. Look around you, hero. What a lovely sight. The wisps are scattering. One by one, the wall comes crashing down. Now is the time. The World Tree is ours for the taking. Find Sarfang. We shall finish this once and for all.
For the Horde!
That sound. Could it be... Shondo, the Horde is approaching from the north!
The north? How did the... Oh... They scaled the mountains of Fellwood. Of course. The wisps. They're growing disoriented. The wall is failing.
Horde forces are advancing upon Lordanel. Champion, to me!
It's Lordanel where our next fight takes place. And honestly, the events here, they can take place either way. Either the Horde is first or the Alliance is first or vice versa. Or maybe even at the same time. They're very intermingable. On the Horde side, we have Sarfang, who made his way across the mountains and is ready to take Lordanel. This is all that stands in our way before we can capture Darnassus and reclaim Kalimdor. We're told to rout the defenders, but we will not slay innocents. If they do not raise arms against us, we're going to spare them. We're going to capture the civilians, question them, and then release them. Kinda makes you wonder what would happen if a civilian doesn't want to talk. Well, Karana Briarbow and Ariel Stegart, they're the commanders in the area. Without their leadership, this force will crumble, so we take their lives with honor. The Alliance, they do pretty much the same. They kill the Horde invaders, they slay two of the Horde's strongest warriors, Gormak Exfall and Rakash Bloodwish. They have led a charge to try and capture our fleet, but we rescue as many civilians as we can. Yet despite our best efforts, the Horde is relentless and Lordanel is overrun. Securely in the Horde's hands, Sarfang wonders why they haven't seen Malfurion on the battlefield. He would never let Lordanel fall without a fight, so he must have gone after the Banshee Queen. In the forest, we find the two locked in battle.
The War Chief faces Stormrage alone. I must... Sarfang!
An audience. Perfect. Stay still, Alliance dog. Watch me strike down one of your greatest heroes.
A dishonorable blow. I regret it.
Regret nothing. You did well.
It was not my place to interfere.
My victory was inevitable. He was merely wasting my time. Finish him and be done with it. Take a moment if you like. Then take his head. Meet me at the World Tree.
You have led your horde in service of death. You will regret this day.
Malfurion, no!
You did not kill him, Orc. Why?
I struck without honor. I did not deserve to end him.
This entire war is without honor! How dare you spill so much innocent blood for nothing!
Not for nothing. We spill blood so that the Horde will endure.
Because you spared Malfurion, I will offer you a choice. Attempt to stop me from taking him away and die, or remain there kneeling in the dirt and live.
You have a choice as well. Take him to Darnassus and both of you will fall when we conquer it, or flee somewhere far from here so that you both survive. Come, champion. We must follow our warchief to victory.
This war is lost. Teldrassil will soon fall. Take my hippogriff to Darnassus. Ensure that the Horde's occupation is as tolerable as it can be. King Anduin gave me a hearthstone back to Stormwind. There I will tend my love's wounds and help my people find respite from this madness.
Despite her prey, her target being on the floor and at her mercy, Sylvanas decides to walk away and let Sourfang finish the job. He doesn't, and instead, Tirana takes her husband away, leaving behind their people. Instead of trying to fight, rally, or find a different plan, she abandons the battlefield and tells the champion to make the occupation of Teldrassil as pleasant as possible. Back at the Warchief, we find a whole bunch of dead elves on the ground, and Captain Dalaran Summermoon kneeling in front of her. We tell our Warchief that we are ready.
Secure the beach. Prepare to invade the tree.
Why? Why? You've already won. Only innocents remain in the tree.
This is war.
No. This is hatred. Rage. Windrunner. You were defender of your people. Do you not remember?
I remember. A fool. Take her! Run!
Now you understand.
don't grieve. You'll soon join your loved ones.
I grieve for you. You've made life your enemy. And that is a war you'll never win. You can kill us, but you cannot kill hope.
Can't I?
Burn it.
Sylvanas Windrunner leads the Horde to victory, but a chance encounter, it causes her to make a decision that forever changed the course of history on Azeroth. She did not come here with the intention to burn the tree, but the words of Dalaran, they change her mind. Some interpret that as the realization that even if they would capture Teldrassil, or even if they take out Malfurion, it would not be enough to crush the hope of the Alliance. She would have to take it further, and so it is that she gives the order to burn down the World Tree.
When I sent you on this mission, I did not foresee this outcome. Our attack was meant to end a war before it began, to capture an enemy's home and annihilate their leaders in one stroke, to inflict a wound that would bleed the Alliance dry. We have only partially succeeded. The Alliance will retaliate. They will come for us. For me, for you. But they are bleeding. Their anger will prove a weakness, not a strength, in the war to come. Rest while you can. Prepare for the battles ahead. I will have need of you.
As a reward, Horde players are given a worn-torn Reigns of the Undercity Plague Bet. A bet that's apparently from the future, as it has a rather interesting Mount Journal description. Meanwhile, the Alliance goes back to Darnassus in an attempt to make the occupation as tolerable as possible, but that's made rather difficult with the tree being on fire. Ballistra Starbreeze, the same Starbreeze from the Scythe of Alun. She's looking for her child Ishala, but there are more citizens that are trapped by the flames. Mia Greymane, Queen of Gilneas. She wants us to help evacuate as many civilians as we can. Time is against us though, and there are so many of them. The heat of the flames, it saps at our strength, until our body becomes heavy as our lungs fill with smoke.
Hero! Hero! Can you hear me? I am relieved. I found you. Astari, hurry! Evacuate the city before it burns!
Mia! Mia! Open your eyes, my queen! My love! You can't stay here any longer! We must escape through the portal!
The tree! They're burning the tree! The child! Save her! Leave me.
Never. I'll take you both. Astari, you've done all you can. Command the priest to come with us.
They will not go.
The Banshee murdered my son. Stole my kingdom. She will not cost me my beloved. May your goddess watch over you.
Astari Starseeker and the priestesses, they decide to stay behind, but we jump through a portal and leave behind the burning Teldrassil. Anduin is filled in on the news, and he is at a loss for words.
You are always.
You have shown courage and heart, champion. On this, one of the Alliance's darkest days. My whole life, I've prayed for peace in this world, but that dream can never be realized so long as Sylvanas Windrunner leads the Horde. She expects this atrocity to crush our spirits, shatter our unity. But this I vow. The Alliance will endure, and the Banshee Queen's insidious reign will be ended.
As a reward, members of the Alliance, they receive the smoldering reigns of the Teldrassil Hippogriff, one of the last great armored hippogriffs to escape the burning of Teldrassil. it carried the last citizens it could to safety before collapsing of exhaustion. And that's the War of Force campaign, which leads into Battle for Azeroth and the Siege of Lordaeron. Now, I spewed my opinion on stream and during my reaction video, in which I had some problems with the storyline. You might have caught some of the sarcastic remarks that I made, but here's the thing. The Battle for Azeroth Collector's Edition, it has stories that are not so much short stories, rather, they're 70-ish pages each, including artwork. The book, which, if I got it right, should also become available online, it tells not so much a different story than what we see going down, rather a much more detailed one, up to the point where I seriously sit back, I scratch my head, and I wonder, why don't we see this in-game? So one of my biggest complaints, that was the motivation behind this war. Sylvanas, she wants to stay alive, and she mentions Anduin by name, accusing him of things that she's been doing, and I would have much rather seen them use the Alliance as a whole, see some sort of threat there, not just Anduin that's been known to keep the peace. We also have past motivations as seen on the PTR that has been changed in between, but here's the motivation that they describe it as in the story A Good War. You are not Garrosh Hellscream. Why do you want to throw the Horde into the meat grinder again? Sylvanas' eyes did not waver, even in the face of his rage. If I dedicated myself to peace with the Alliance, would it last a year? Yes, said Saurfin curtly. How about 2 years? 5? 10? 50? Saurfin felt the trap closing in on him, and he did not like it. We fought side by side against the Burning Legion. That creates bonds that are not easily broken. Time breaks every bond. Sylvanas leaned across the table. Her words flew like arrows. What do you believe? Will peace last 5 years or 50? He leaned forward too, his face is inches away from hers. Neither blinked. What I believe doesn't matter, Warchief. What do you believe? I believe the exiles of Gilneas will never forgive the Horde for driving them away. I believe the living humans of Lordaeron think it's blasphemy that my people still hold their city. I believe the ancient divide between our allies in Silvermoon and their kin in Darnassus is not easily mended. There was a smile on Sylvanas' face. It was not a pleasant one. I believe the Darkspear tribe hasn't forgotten who drove them from the islands, she continued. I believe every orc your age remembers being imprisoned for years in filthy camps, wallowing in despair and surviving on human scraps. I believe every human remembers the tales of the terrible Horde that caused so much destruction in its first invasion. And I believe they blame every orc for that, no matter what your people have done to redeem yourselves. And I remember very well that my first Forsaken were once loyal Alliance citizens. We died for that banner, and our reward was to be hunted as vermin. I believe that there will be no permanent peace with the Alliance, not unless we win it on the battlefield on our terms. And believing that, answer this, Saurfang, what use is delaying the inevitable? The boy in Stormwind will not start a war tomorrow, Saurfang said, his eyebrows lowered. With Ken Greymane in his ears? We will see. That was a concern, Saurfang had to concede. In the thick of fighting against the Burning Legion, Greymane had launched a mission to kill Sylvanas. It had gotten some of Stormwind's few remaining airships destroyed. There were whispers that Greymane had ordered an attack without Anduin's permission, but as far as Saurfang knew, Greymane had not been punished. The implications of that were troubling, and every possible explanation, it led to the same conclusion. The old Worgen would always drive the Alliance towards war against the Horde. Sylvanas' eyes glittered, and the boy is becoming a man. What if the man decides that he has no choice but to launch a war on us? There is a bit more, but you get the idea, right? They use the history between the Alliance and Horde to motivate it. In their mind, even 100 years of peace, that would be a coward's bargain if they could claim dominance, secure peace by force. Of course, you could argue that if time breaks all bonds, then what's stopping them from causing another war once they actually claim dominance? You could argue that words might bring them greater profit. You could argue that Order Halls still need a better explanation for turning on each other. But man oh man, is this so much better than what was portrayed in-game? Then the game plan, their tactics, it's still similar. Capture the tree and take out Malfurion, but it's explained in greater detail. The plan is to capture the World Tree to splinter the unity amongst the Alliance. They would seek vengeance, of course, but they would have citizens hostage. They would not dare to strike at the Undercity for fear of their own people. It would even take them years to muster the fleet to attempt to do so. How would Gilneas respond to the Alliance reclaiming Tel'Drassil before the home of the Gilneans? infighting. Anduin in his new role of High King having to deal with a political crisis. The respect that the others give him, that's a courtesy and not an obligation. If the Alliance will not march as one, each nation will act in its own interest. Each army will simply return home to protect their lands from the Horde. One single victory, it would cripple the Alliance for years. It would destroy them from within. Then they could strike peace with the individual nations and carve them away from the Alliance, piece by piece.
Dismantle
the Alliance. Calculating, cunning, and it might actually work. We do read in Elegy, which is the Alliance side of things, that their expectations, they would fail regardless of outcome, as Anduin speaks with Greymane. And what of Gilneas? What will you say to me if I choose to help the Kaldori first? Which he would, especially if the Horde threatened thousands of prisoners and Gen knew it. I cannot act if the Alliance is divided, Anduin said. That's what this action is intended to do, Gen. Not just take Darnassus, but to use it against us, striking at the very heart of what makes our kingdom the Alliance. Sylvanas is going to turn us against one another. That is the grand plan, and I was a fool for not to see it earlier. Gen was silent for a long moment. When did you learn so much about strategy? Anduin laughed humorlessly. I was reading when I should have been sparring. Well, you are a fool. Anduin turned to regard him, surprised by the words. A fool to think for a moment that I would withdraw my support because you are helping the Kaldori. Do I want my kingdom back? My people to return to their homes? Of course I do. Do I want it badly enough to allow innocent Night Elves to suffer when they so generously have helped the Gilneans these last few years? When they mitigated the Worgen curse so we could hang on to ourselves and not get lost in madness? When they fed us, sheltered us, and offered us their home where we had nothing? Gen made a dismissive noise, somewhere between a huff and a snarl. No, I would never betray that kindness by turning my back on them now. Sylvanas certainly doesn't understand the Alliance. She is in for a rude awakening, and you can mark my words.
I mark your words, Gen Greymane, and my heart is full to hear them. They are a beacon in a time of terrible darkness.
Both men turned to see Tirana standing in the doorway, still dressed in her priestess's robes. So yeah, union amongst the Alliance, but a much, much more understandable motivation and battle plan for the Horde. Unfortunately, those last moments, the passing the kill on to Sourfang and deciding to burn the World Tree, they haven't really improved in my opinion. The motivation for burning, that is described as inflicting the wound that Malfurion's death was supposed to cause. But since Sourfang refused to kill him, she had to do something else, and in that moment, she decided to give the order. Sourfang screams for them to stop firing. This is not their way. This is not what he signed up for, but it's already too late. The screams continued. They reminded him of Shephreth. He had loved the sound then. Smoke filled the air, reminding him of Stormwind, of racing through the streets as buildings burned all around him, finding cowering humans and butchering them as they begged for their lives. He had loved the slaughter then, demon blood pumping in his veins, and he had loved this war too, hadn't he? Sourfang did not move for hours, not until the screams faded and the flames had burned themselves down to embers. Before him stood a smoking husk that had once been a great civilization. Inside him was a feeling of despair, a feeling of shame. There was no haze of corruption now to soften the horror. Sourfang would remember this moment in his dreams forever. He would relive his shame and all the new ones to come, over and over again. You have led your Horde in service of death, Malfurion had said. How could Sourfang face the soldiers he had led into the war? How could he explain what they had done? He couldn't. He would never know how, but the burden would be his. Always, until his dying day. As Sourfang turned away, he hoped that that day would come soon.
Do not grow old, if you can help it.
The campaign itself, in its entirety, it actually describes the Night Elves with a lot more bite, a lot more mini skirmishes here and there, and fighting back, rather than saying them it's a battle that they don't even want to fight. The ending is absolutely heart-wrenching when they figure out that the battle that they knew from the start would be near impossible to win, that the battle is not going to end in an occupation, but in a roaring fire, genocide of their people. Mia, who spent her time until the final moment saving as many citizens as she could, she is saved again at the last moment. In her arms is the last child of the Kaldori to be saved from Teldrassil. They named it Finel. The last, and the priestesses who remained behind held their people close. Astari asked the Loon for one final blessing. Not for healing or for rescue,
but for mercy. And their goddess heard them, as Astari began to sing. Sleep brushed her mind, fetter soft, honey sweet. The pain disappeared, and she let out a sigh. All around her, she heard similar sounds. There would be no pain in the lady's light, in the lady's love. Mother and child both slept, breathing gently despite the smoke. Her duty faithfully discharged, Astari allowed her own eyelids to flutter closed. There will be justice one day, but eyes other than ours will behold it. The last thing she heard was a cracking sound as she slipped into slumber. Oh man, way more details than I expected to share. But like I said, this book, it just adds a whole lot more detail to the story. Details that, honestly, it should have been represented in-game. And in my opinion, it did not come forward well enough. There's also a mention of Sylvanas planning more than she tells Sourfang. Alun had intervened. Perhaps it even stayed Sourfang's killing blow. And she wouldn't be the only force beyond the Alliance to oppose Sylvanas' true objective. I wonder what they're trying to hint at here, but as you can probably tell, I am very happy with this additional storytelling. Hopefully, soon enough, the story will become available online, so you can read all the juicy details for yourself. And by all means, let me know what you think of it so far. Does this actually change anything for you? I've been loving the discussion surrounding the events. I do think it's time to call it a day though, as I've been going on for long enough. So as always, thank you very much for watching everyone. If you want more details on all the things that we talked about today, then by all means, check out the Delayed Wild article in the description down below. Subscribe if you like my videos, leave a like if you enjoyed this one, and until next time guys, see ya!
Love that raving, ain't no bosses hard, ain't no rain nights long, ain't no amount of wipes enough, baby.
If it's a wipe, just call it, no waiting for a rest, listen what the raid lead says.
Don't send in fire,
just call CDs, they'll be down in a hurry, you don't have to worry,
cause baby. Baby, we pulled it together. He's dead somehow. Better show if you want. Yeah, he's releasing now. Cause baby, there
ain't no bosses hard enough. Ain't no rain nights long enough. Ain't no amount of wipes enough to keep me from clearing that raving.
Oh no, darling.
Here's a few things about how mounts used to work in their first forms. Each race got to ride their own racial mount, and had to buy special training to ride those mounts. Like dwarves needed to learn ram riding to ride ram mounts, or orcs needing wolf riding to ride wolves. You could then purchase riding of other racial mounts if you managed to get exalted reputations with those other races in patch 1.2. The original levels for mounts were level 40 for the 60% mount, and level 60 for the epic mounts, or the 100% speed mounts. When you bought a mount, you could use it as long as you were high enough level, and you used the mount from your backs. Mounts required a 3-second cast time to mount up, and dismounted you if you entered combat or touched water. Also, the mounts themselves were expensive. Being able to actually buy the mounts at level, if it was your first character and not an alt, was pretty rare. The level 40 60% speed mount costed 100 gold, and the level 60 100% speed mount costed 1,000 gold. To adjust for inflation, getting 1,000 gold in vanilla WoW was almost like farming 500,000 gold in Legion, if you were to compare the amount of time and effort it took to get that much gold to today. It was pretty common for people to just not be able to afford one. In patch 1.4, Blizzard released the epic armor versions of the mounts we have today as the level 60 mounts for each race. It used to be that the 100% speed mounts looked exactly the same as the 60% speed mounts, only with different color variations. With this patch, those color variations were removed from the game, making those different color mounts extremely rare, as this was still pretty early on in Vanilla WoW, and most people couldn't afford one yet. And to make them even more rare, Blizzard added an option to trade in one of your old color variation mounts for one of the newer armored ones. Most people can play WoW for years and never run across one of these alt color variations. I should also probably mention Warlock and Paladin mounts before I move on from this time period. Warlock and Pally's technically got a, quote, free mount at level 40, and Pally's again at 60, except for the fact that each mount required very long questings to complete, with some of them requiring you to pay a ton of gold anyway for special items for those quests. Then towards the very end of Vanilla WoW, Blizzard made some big changes to mounts. First, they added the secondary profession of riding that we have today, and got rid of learning how to ride specific mounts. So at level 40, you could learn a riding skill of 75 to ride 60% speed mounts, and then at level 60, you could learn up to level 150 skill to ride 100% speed mounts. The cost of learning these two skills was about 80 gold for the 60% mounts, and around 900 gold for the epic mounts. But the cost of mounts themselves were significantly reduced. 60% mounts only cost 20 gold each instead of 100, and 100% speed mounts only cost 100 gold each instead of 1,000. This meant people could, realistically, actually buy more than one epic mount. Of course, these changes were made to ready the playing field for when flying mounts were added. In the Burning Crusade, WoW's first expansion, flying mounts were added to the game, but with the limit of only being usable in Outlands. Flying mounts could be learned at level 70, but cost 900 gold to learn, and the basic flying mounts went for 100 gold on top of that. Also, the original flying mounts at this first level only went at 60% movement speed, and were very slow. But of course, everyone saved up to get one as soon as they could, because even at such a slow flying speed, flying over things was still faster than traveling by land. And you also didn't have to worry about being dismounted by combat, or getting ganked on PvP servers. If you wanted epic flying mounts, or the 280% speed mounts, you were going to have to pay 5,000 gold for the training, and another 200 gold for the basic epic flying mount. 5,000 gold in TBC was pretty much the same as 1,000 gold in Vanilla WoW, if you account for inflation. So it was hard to get, and many people saved up for months to afford it. But it was totally worth it. 280% flying was a tiny bit faster than 60%. I should probably also mention, in this time, mounts still only had one speed to them. If you bought a 60% flying mount, it could only ever fly at 60% speed, even if you had 280 speed training. Same with ground mounts and their speeds. Of course, if you were a PvPer and reached a gladiator rank in arenas, part of your rewards was an exclusive 280% speed flying mount, and a free skill up to ride that mount. So really good PvPers didn't have to pay 5,000 gold to ride epic flying mounts, which was probably a pretty good incentive to get people to actually PvP. A problem WoW currently has, where arena participation is at an all-time low. Also with the Burning Crusade, Blizzard introduced the first ever profession mounts, with the two flying machines engineers could make. But only engineers could use these mounts, so obviously, many people took engineering just to use them, even if engineering wasn't one of the greatest professions to have at the time. You really shouldn't underestimate just how much people really love mounts. Ground mounts also saw some adjustments. The 60% ground mounts were changed to be learned at level 30 instead of 40. The training cost was reduced to 35 gold, making it a lot more noob-friendly to actually have a mount while leveling up for the first time. And the 100% speed mounts were changed to only cost 600 gold instead of 900 to learn the riding skill. Still kinda expensive. In Wrath of the Lich King, Blizzard added the first of many to-come restrictions to flying in New Worlds. In order to prevent people from flying around Northrend, they added the clause of needing cold weather flying to fly in Northrend, which cost 1,000 gold to learn at 77. The reason it was learned at a lower than max level is because the last two zones you could level in, Ice Crown and Storm Peaks, were designed with flying in mind. Hell, one of the main quest hubs in Ice Crown is your faction's flying ship that is constantly in the air. Blizzard also added 310 flying speed mounts in this expansion, only with the twist of there being no way to actually train to use it. Only special mounts from hard to get raiding and PvP achievements had the 310% movement speed, so the only way to fly at the fastest possible speed was to be a hardcore raider, PvPer, or to wait a year, because this is also the expansion Blizzard added achievements, and with achievements, the holiday meta achievement of what a long strange trip it's been, which required you to complete pretty much all of the holiday achievements of every single major holiday event in game, which in the end awarded a 310 flying speed mount. And this mount is how most of the player base actually managed to get 310 flying. Just like in TBC, Blizzard made some changes to ground mounts again. This time, the changes were a lot bigger, and are pretty much still how mounts function today. Mounts were changed to only require a 1.5 second cast time, instead of 3 seconds, cutting the mount cast time in half. 60% speed mounts could be learned at level 20, and only for 4 gold. That's a huge discount compared to the old vanilla version of level 40 and 100 gold. The 100% speed mounts were lowered to be learned at level 40 and only cost 50 gold to learn. The basic flying mount was changed to be learned at level 60. Its base movement speed was increased to 150% movement speed, because 60% was kinda stupid for a flying mount, and its cost was reduced to 250 gold, down from 900. With this change, players could actually fly the whole time they quested through Outlands now, assuming they had the gold to afford the flying. And they also added a Tome of Cold Weather Flight, which was an heirloom that could be bought by max level players to teach an alt how to fly in Northrend, allowing players to fly the whole time they could quest in Northrend, instead of just the tail end of it. On an alt, anyway. Wrath of the Lich King was the mount-friendly expansion, paving way for all of the conveniences we enjoy today when it comes to mounts. This expansion is also when the mount tab was added, so you no longer had to carry around mounts in your bags to use them. Also, side note, the patch most of these changes went live, patch 3.2, is also when I started playing the game. I remember downloading the game and messing around in my Torrent Hunter, logging off and going to school, only to come back and see that I had to download this thing called a patch if I wanted to play. I thought maybe something had gone wrong and they were trying to fix my game, since I had just installed it. And I remember reading through the patch notes and seeing the mount changes and thinking, wow, that's neat. I'm glad I started playing now because I can get a mount when I hit level 20. Also, side note, Mammoth mounts introduced in this expansion actually had their own health pools, and you could jump from high places and they would just take the fall damage for you and die, as well as allowing players to carry around other people on their mounts for the first time. Anyways, back to the main video topic. Wrath was also when the very first ever store mount was added to the game, the Celestial Steed. Now, store mounts are a pretty accepted part of the game nowadays, and most people don't really bat an eye at them when a new one is announced. But this mount was different. You see, this mount actually provided a tiny in-game advantage. It used to be that all mounts were character-specific and not account-wide. If you got an awesome mount from an achievement on your main, you couldn't use it on your alt, even if you had the correct level of riding and etc. But the sparkly pony would be mailed to every single character you had, including all future characters you might make. I still have the sparkle pony in the bags of some of my alts that I made back then that never hit level 20 to use it. And what this meant was that you only needed to pay the 4 gold for training to be able to use a mount, instead of also having to have, like, 20 gold to buy your first mount. Not only that, but the Sparkle Pony was the only mount in game to also scale with your riding training. It would go at 60% speed at level 20, 100% speed at level 40, 150% speed and be able to fly at level 60, and so on and so on. All other mounts only had one mode of speed, and that's it. So with all of these advantages over regular mounts, people were outraged at WoW going paid to win, and the Sparkle Pony ended up doing extremely well. Tons of people bought one. In fact, you had to wait an hour-long queues on Blizzard Store if you wanted a chance at getting one. I, of course, bought one too because of all the advantages I listed earlier. It was a very convenient mount to have, and it looked cool. The mount was so popular that if you ran a BG at low levels, chances are half the team on both sides would be riding the Sparkle Pony. If you went to a low level questing area, half the players there would be running around on Sparkle Ponies. It was such a popular mount that Blizzard even made fun of it in their famous quests, Into the Machine, where they have a character named Johnny Awesome who's decked out in heirlooms and rides around on a Sparkle Pony. Because that was the stereotypical hardcore WoW player's alt. Full heirlooms in a Celestial Steed. Since the Celestial Steed was such a success, Blizzard eventually turned a lot of the things that made the mount such a good seller into other mounts as well. But we'll talk about those things a little bit later. In Cataclysm, with the revamp of the old world, flying mounts no longer had the distinction of only usable in Outlands and Northrend, and instead, didn't say anything. There were still some no-flying zones, but with flying enabled in Azeroth, there was no real need to make the distinction. It was just easier for a zone to tell you you couldn't fly there. Old World zone flying could be bought right away and learned at level 60, which is the last time Blizzard allowed players to fly right off the bat in a new expansion in the new areas. Mounts were also changed to scale with your riding level. So no longer was a Celestial Steed the only mount in game who could do that. And also, Blizzard allowed players to train in 310 flying speed, which, of course, allowed you to ride whatever mount you wanted at the highest speed, instead of only the handful that could previously. If you managed to get 310 flying before the change, you got the skill up for free, instead of paying 5,000 gold for it. And cold weather flying was changed to be learned at the trainer at level 68. Instead of needing to buy an heirloom tome, and its cost was cut in half to 500 gold, which just made questing through Wrath a little easier. Cataclysm is also when the first flying two-seater craftable mount was added to the game in the form of the Sandstone Drake. Before this, the only way to get a flying two-seater was through a recruiter friend promotions. The Sandstone Drake was pretty darn expensive, as a lot of its mats could only be bought from special vendors that sold them for tens of thousands of gold. But it was still a more convenient way of flying a friend around than having to deal with recruiter friend. In Mists of Pandaria, Blizzard started to not really like flying mounts as much as they used to. So they made it so that you couldn't fly in Pandaria until max level. And even today, as of making this video in Legion, is still the case. Pandaria is one of the slowest zones to level through, as the only way to get flying early is to buy a stupid book from the black market auction house that will allow you to learn the flying at level 85. They also added a special flying skill to be able to fly cloud serpents, which they eventually just gave to everyone for free since it was a kinda dumb restriction. Mist is also when mounts were finally made account bound, and with this change, in-game store mounts no longer had any advantage over normal mounts, other than looking a lot cooler. In Warlords of Draenor, Blizzard was really happy about restricting flying, and thought to themselves, you know what, how about no flying at all in Draenor? To which everyone else replied, how about we do fly? Pretty much every discussion thread on the WoW's forums that talked about flying in Draenor would cap out. People really wanted to be able to fly in the new expansion, like they could in all other expansions. But that's not to say all of the discussion was one-sided. A lot of the people didn't want flying at all in Draenor. But these were mainly world PvPers who loved to gank people, so no one cared about them. And Blizzard eventually added a way to get flying in Draenor a few patches into the game with a Pathfinder achievement. This achievement was a very long, hard to accomplish list of tasks that basically proved you'd already explored and did everything in the zone and deserved flying. And people kinda liked it. Once you got the achievement once, you unlocked flying on all of your characters and alts forever, which meant you didn't have to spend money on zone-specific flying for each new alt you leveled up. And since there was such a positive reaction to the pathfinding achievement, Blizzard did the same thing for Legion and didn't allow flying on the Broken Isles until you complete the Mega achievement, which couldn't actually be completed until a few patches in when the Broken Shore content unlocked. Which was basically a half measure on Blizzard's part. They wanted people to actually explore their new zones they spent a lot of time on instead of people just flying over it, while at the same time, eventually, allowing people to fly over it. Except Argus, you can't fly there ever. Of course, the new system is not perfect. It's kinda a deterrent to players returning to the game after long breaks, or to new players, and will be a pain in the ass to get in future expansions, where you'd much rather just want to pay to unlock flying, rather than having to do literally every single quest in the zones, plus all the other tedious shit you need to do to unlock flying just because you didn't play during that expansion. Now, let me go back a little bit and talk about a few things I may have skipped over. In Warlords is when Blizzard made it so a lot of flying mounts could be used as ground mounts as well, in no-fly zones. Cold weather flying was also changed to only cost 50 gold to learn at level 68, and be given to a player for free once they hit level 80. If they hadn't bought it already before then. Warlords of Draenor is also when the very first and only level 1 mounts were added to the game, the Heirloom Motorcycles. Well, actually, I guess I should say the first mount that could be used at level 1 that functioned like a normal mount. Technically, the Sea Turtles came first and also could be used at level 1, but they didn't increase your ground speed, so mounting one was the same as just running at normal speed. They did increase your swim speed, though. The motorcycles are some of the few mounts to not scale with your riding training, and only ever go at 60% movement speed. But they do have a few advantages over normal mounts. For one, you can use it without training, so it's usable at level 1, giving players a much faster quest and experience than ever before. And two, you can't be dismounted from a daze on this mount, so it's actually useful for running through packs of mobs at higher levels if you don't mind the slower speed. In Legion is when Blizzard changed swimming mounts to actually swim faster than 100% movement speed. They used to be pathetically slow, and now are only less so. They should really increase it way more than it is now, but I guess it's better than the slow speed it used to be before they finally increase it a little bit in Legion. Okay, and that's it for all the major stuff. There's a lot of littler things I could have covered too, like all the useful mounts with vendors and water walking mounts being introduced, or the various other class mounts added over time and special abilities and items that increase mount speed, like the infamous Mithril Spurs in vanilla. But this video's already a lot longer than I thought it would be, so I'm just gonna leave it at that. We'll be right back.
Okay, since novel segment was rather long, but I didn't see a valid point in dividing it into two pieces, because next show is going to be the BFA launch show, and I'd like a clean slate for that. I'm not going to add too much more. I will leave it at this. The last piece we heard was Hiromaru Dex's The History of Mounts in Game, and the song that you heard before that was Kavo and Silvalatomi with their Ain't No Bosses Hard Enough parody. I hope that novel segment wasn't too long for you, and I hope that you'll come back on August the 13th for episode 41, which is going to be, like I mentioned, the BFA launch episode with a really special guest. As I mentioned in a few teasers, it is the first ever interview that we have on the show. Hopefully not the last. I can't say I'm working on more, but I have a few ideas, and I'm going to check to see if anything is possible with regards to getting more interviews done in the future. Obviously, it's not going to happen every show, but every once in a while, if the occasion permits it, I would like to sit down with a couple of people that I have in mind. And again, not promising anything, this first one has been, and is probably going to stay that way for quite a bit of time, my highlight of my podcasting and WoW playing career. So I hope you'll come back on August the 13th to sit down with me and my guest and enjoy what Corps Run Radio is, which is the home of the Forsaken. So let me thank Noble 87, Kavo 350, Silvalatomi, Hiromaru Dex, and Charm for letting me use their content on Corps Run Radio from show to show, and I hope that you have a great time in and out of game. Like I mentioned at the beginning, please, please refrain from unnecessary posts on Twitter and blaming people that don't have anything to do with the reason why you are upset. If you are, there's always the choice that you can make, and that is stop playing. It's not the most ideal choice, but you have that choice. If there is something that you do not like in the game, and you are not willing to give the developers the benefit of the doubt and wait and see how the story is going to develop, there's always the button that you use to unsubscribe. That is always the choice you have. With that, as the last segment of the show today, here is Charm with Teldrassil Burns. Bye everyone. Cheers.
Thank you for listening. Now go out, my minions. Let nothing stand in your way. Until next time.